Welcome to another full edition of After Hours. It will be joyful for you because my first guest for the entire hour is my old friend and one of the great treasures of this city, Spider Saloff. Hi.
Hi, Rick. I'm so happy to be here.
Thanks for coming in, honey. I want to do the whole Spider Saloff life story here. If memory serves, Spider, I've known you since, I think, about the early 90s. Is that about when you came here?
Moved here in 92.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where were you before that? Where did you grow up?
New York City.
You grew up in New York City?
No. But I was in New York. I had been there for, what, like 8-9 years?
Tell me about your childhood and your first introduction to music. Seriously.
Outside of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I lived in a very idyllic suburban setting. My dad's first jewelry store was right in South Philly on Sanson Street.
Oh, how nice.
And then when I was a baby, we had moved to the suburbs.
Which suburb?
It was in New Jersey, in a Revolutionary War town called Woodbury.
Oh, wow.
My dad's jewelry store was there, and I had a lovely childhood. I really did. But I was an oddball, and I was the last kid. I was definitely a surprise.
What made you an oddball, honey?
I was just an odd kid. I always liked, artsy things, and I didn't have the likes that a lot of kids had,
You didn't want to become a housewife.
Definitely not. Yeah. My mother yelled at me one time, and so I was about 4, and she said, she was mad at me, and she said, "I hope when you grow up, you have a child just like you." And I put hands on hips and said, "I'm never having any old baby."
When did music enter your life? Was music part of your family's life?
No, it's so foreign to them. I mean, they appreciate music, but there's nothing artistic about my family at all. And that's why, the strangeness of this. I remember the first time I saw Ella Fitzgerald on the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm. And I was a kid, and I thought, I don't know what that lady's doing, because she was scat singing.
Sure.
But I said, I like that. What is that? What is that?
How old were you?
I was probably about 8.
Okay.
And I was like, I was fascinated by music and anything theatrical. I mean, sometimes they would take us to see musicals. And, mm-hmm.
Sure, and, you're close enough to New
and
York
I,
and stuff.
I loved loved to go to theater, and then fell in love with theater, and I didn't let my parents know that I could sing. I was 14.
What did you do, go in a closet and
I
practice?
Practically did. There was a school variety show coming up, and I was still in junior high, and I started rehearsing at my girlfriend's house because she was from a big Italian family. Loved me. They were like, "Oh, come sing at our party. Here, have some lasagna." And so I told my parents. I said, "Well, next week I can get you a ticket to the variety show." And they're like,
"Why would we want to go to that?"
And they're like, "I'm in it." And they said, "Doing what?" And I said, "Singing." And they were like, and I didn't want to tell them because they would have told me I couldn't, and I was going to be a fool. And they came and they were like, "Where did she come from?" Like,
do you remember the song?
Oh yes.
Oh wow.
I sang "I'm the Greatest Star" from Funny Girl.
Oh god.
And it was
fantastic.
And it was like a teenage Barbara Streisand impression.
What was it? And that would have been then the first time you got an audience response, meaning applause. What did that do?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And then before this, the band director put me in the band because they tested kids for musical ability.
Sure.
And I played clarinet, and I started, and I was kind of like in the second chair, and then I kept getting worse. And the reason I was getting worse is they didn't know that I was dyslexic, and I couldn't read music, and I was memorizing everything.
Oh, my God.
And once my memory bank was full,
I wasn't very good. You couldn't do anymore. That was that.
So then the choir director saw me in the variety show, and he snapped me up and put me in the choir. And this guy was the one that got me into a summer stock theater company when I was 16.
Wow.
And my parents gladly let me go. "Get her out of here for the summer. She'll be fine."
God. That's a great story. We've known each other a long time. I never even heard that. So you did Summer Stock.
Yeah, and I had the theater bug then. I was just in love with... I was in shows in school, and then I was in this whole season of Summer Stock, old-timey Summer Stock, that you did a show four nights a week, five nights a week, and you were rehearsing another show while you were doing it.
Wow.
And it was real hardcore, old-timey.
And you loved it.
I was nuts for it. Nuts for it. And then when I graduated high school, I got I went to a fine arts school that was it was a state college at the time, and a lot of singers and actors came out of that school.
What was the school?
It's now Rowan University, but it was Glassboro State. It's outside of Philadelphia, and Patti Smyth went to that school.
Oh, wow.
It's really out there.
Yeah.
Well, now this guy, sometime in the 90s, late 90s, I think it was, a guy made the largest private donation in American history, a guy named Rowan, and it's now an engineering school, and there's no fine arts at all.
Unbelievable. Uh-huh. Did you graduate from that school?
I graduated when it was still Glassboro State.
And then you said...
I started to work in like little theater companies, and I worked and worked, and then, you know, never... I did out-of-town shows. I was
so you
gypsy.
Were at
I played
that,
gypsy
at
on
in
tour.
Your late teens, early 20s, you were committed to being a musical theater person.
And I worked in musical theater in a lot of crappy jobs, and then just kept doing it, and I was in New York, and I was in a lot of I was in two off-Broadway flops. I was in a couple bad shows. And then I was in a lot of bad shows, or tours, you know, short tours, little regional tours. And I did a ton of roles, and then I was just getting exhausted because this was now we're in the mid-80s, and you can't get an audition on Broadway unless you can dance. This is the triple threat era.
Sure.
So I didn't have an agent, and then I started to look at clubs. The nightclub world called to me, and I... Sorry.
No, that's perfect. It's a perfect time.
Okay, more later.
We have gotten Fighters They Love. Grown up, the nightclub world is calling. You will hear what it said and what it did after a short little break. Welcome back. I'm sitting here with the great singer Spider Saloff, and we have taken her from her youth in Philadelphia and New Jersey. She's in New York. There's not many opportunities for theater because she doesn't dance, but she sings, and she decides to try nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big leap. You're in your early 20s, I'm assuming.
It was a big leap, and it was like the time was good because you could there were a lot of clubs, there was a lot of cabaret rooms and places that you really could control your destiny.
Sure.
And I met a lot of good musicians, and some of the guys I met were pit musicians from some of the shows I'd been doing.
Sure.
And they were kind of giving me the guidelines of the jazz world, and then I met other people that were in cabaret. And then,
so it's a kind of self-made career that you're doing here.
Yeah, very creative, but because it's like nobody's going to do this for me, I got to do it myself.
Yeah, and so you started working in the clubs in New York,
and then got recognition by when there was still press. Got a lot of press in New York, and then there was a show that I did with my partner Ricky Ritzel, who was my musical partner, and we created this show called 1938. And it got a lot of attention. It got a rave in the New York Times. And then that was sort of, you know, that sort of was the big moment that things started to get better. You know, you got to play better rooms and work with different people. And
what was the gist of the show? Was it music from year?
It's a beautiful show. It was actually my first album, too.
Mm.
It's about events that happened, but it's all these songs and the people that were actually on Broadway then at the time. It's lots of storytelling, and it actually sets the roots of the way I write my shows to this day.
Exactly. I was just
because
say
I always
that.
Love to talk about history, because nothing is scarier or funnier than the truth.
Well, your shows, if I've known you, since you got to Chicago 30-some years ago, they're always themed. I mean, you were going to be at Winters on the on May 26th, which is
a week from today.
A week from today.
Mm-hmm.
And that show is devoted to Peggy Lee, right?
Yeah, The Cool Heat of Peggy Lee. And it's about her fascinating, crazy life. But the amount and the array of music that she performed and recorded and produced. I mean, she was an incredible.
Do you find her to be underrated now?
I think she has been underrated at times, but I think there's a new awakening.
Mm.
People, new generations are hearing her music. They're even like using some of it in commercials, and I think people are rediscovering her. And
you
I really,
have a new your new CD. Speaking, we're talking exactly about New York
yeah.
and everything else. It's called From Broadway to Jazz. Let's hear you sing. Let's hear you sing, Brett Jackson. God, that's really, really lovely, hon. That's
oh,
really, really,
thank you.
Really lovely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. You were having success in New York.
Yeah, and then a lot of wonderful things happened out of that. It was about that time that I heard about the Gold Star Sardine Bar.
In Chicago.
Gold Star Sardine Bar in Chicago through the great Julie Wilson,
mm-hmm.
and who was a wonderful, wonderful woman and sweet friend.
Yeah, me too.
And I learned about that room, and then I sent a press kit. And then
to the great Bill Allen, who ran that room. He ran Treasure Island grocery stores with the Gamberos brothers and had this little sliver of a bar. You know, it can be argued, Spider, that the Gold Star was the most unusual bar in the history of this town.
Oh, for sure.
It was a tiny, tiny place.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I mean, Tony Bennett had been there and all these people.
Bobby Short played there.
And Bobby was one of the partners, actually.
Yeah.
And Bill decided that he wanted to, he would call me on the phone and talk to me and say wacky stuff. And and then he asked me to come out to play New Year's Eve, ringing in 1991.
Wow.
And he flew me and my husband out here, and we did New Year's Eve weekend, and it was amazing. And then Bill kept threatening to have me back, and then he didn't. And then in 92, he had me play for a month in October.
I first saw you.
And then I came. Then I didn't hear from him. And suddenly in February, he called me up, and I was leaving to go on a tour in the Midwest with my partner, Ricky Ritzel.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going on tour, and he said, "How'd you like to move here?" And I'm like, "What?" And he said, "I want you to start like this week." And I said, "I'm leaving for tour tomorrow." He goes, when are you done?" I said, "In 5 days." I went right part of the tour. I came here. And then we just moved. He moved us here.
Wow.
He moved us here. And that was like...
And how often would you be performing here?
We worked like crazy people. I mean, all those musicians that met, that the treasures of my life, people like Jeremy Kahn and Brad Williams and Eric Schneider and all these wonderful people, we worked like crazy people. We played Wednesday through Saturday, and we played till like, I don't know, 1 a.m. We did a ton of sets. We worked like crazy people, and I never had to learn that much music that fast in my life.
Did you start playing other clubs in Chicago at that time?
Not at the time.
You were exclusive to the Gold Star.
I was there for a year. I was there for a year.
Wow.
And then I think he thought I was just going to go away, but I didn't. And I went and started working in all sorts of rooms, and then right at that time was when I started working with the Gershwin family, because the centennial was coming up.
Right.
And then that was a whole other chapter of amazing stuff. And
wow. We will get to that chapter after you listen to the news at the bottom of the hour. We're talking to Spider Saloff, who is performing at Winter's Jazz Club, just across the river. You go to Spider's website. She's got a great website, Spider, SALOFF.com, or go to wintersjazzclub.com. We're going to talk about the Gershwin thing and also about Spider, more so than almost any singer I have ever known, is attracted to the Great American Songbook and the people who created the Great American Songbook. And I want to know why. And I want to know about the theatrical nature of your performance, too. You don't just sit there and sing. It's a history lesson.
It's a whole crazy show.
It's a show is what it's called. So listen to the news and then come back and visit with me and Spider Saloff. Welcome back. I am still sitting here with Spider Saloff, talking not only about her life and her background and how she came from New York to settle in Chicago and play most of the time when she first got here at the legendary Gold Star Sardine Bar. Then you start to spread your vocal wings, right? You start to play other clubs.
Yeah, yeah, other clubs. And the press was so, so wonderful to me here. And
Howard Wright.
Oh, God, yes. And I played with so many great musicians and recorded, like, my second album after we moved here.
Let me ask you, Spider, you were ardently drawn to the Great American Songbook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've always loved it.
You know, Gershwin, Arlen, all, you know, Carmichael, all those guys. Why?
You know why? I think, A, I love the music because it's so flexible, because I love theater. It's one of the reasons we did this album, but I love jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And this music is so timeless, and it really is our American jazz and musical theater are the things that really are American music.
No question.
And
no question.
And then you look at somebody like George Gershwin or Duke Ellington, their roots are in jazz, and the music lends itself to that. So it's got this flexibility, but also the music is very storytelling. It's very human. And it's very relatable.
Mm.
You know, it's about people having broken hearts, people falling in love.
Falling out of love.
People running away. It's like, it tells so much story. And I find it, my favorite thing is when you take something and you present it in a new light, where you don't even think about it being from the 1920s. It can still sound like it was written last week.
When you take a song, do you find yourself being an interpreter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And also musically deciding what to do. What can we do that would be fun? Like the song that they played a little while ago was Speak Low, and that was written by Kurt Vile and Ogden Nash.
Mm.
And to put that Latin groove in it and that arrangement where it's this slow, like just the drums and, you know, the whole feel of it, it's very unusual. It's not even recognizable as that tune. And until you get into the tune, then you know. But so many people thought it was new.
You know, you've been in, you know, the strangest thing about music these days to me is the change in the recording industry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I remember the days when the CDs were invented, and that was a calling card.
Yeah.
But now the way people consume music is so different. It's not, when you make a CD, there's a certain narrative to the songs. There's a reason why this song is number
one.
It's
an album.
Exactly.
An album. But there are albums now again. You know, like Taylor Swift puts out an album,
mm-hmm.
and there is a path and there's a theme, because for a long time that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And that is why I called this the new album. We pressed CDs because a lot of people wanted the tactile thing, but
sure.
But the digital listening we got for this was amazing. I mean, I am very excited about how accessible this is. We're getting a lot of digital downloads, and Spotify named me one of the best jazz vocalists on their big list.
Wow.
Like, and
there must be thousands of people on that list. Yeah.
And so it's exciting, but you know what? My first recording, 1938, that was not the year it was recorded.
Mm-hmm.
That was reel to reel. We recorded that reel-to-reel, and it was only out on cassette tape.
Wow. Let me ask you, too, the club scene in Chicago. You know, Winters is a great club. The club scene in Chicago has changed drastically, markedly in 30 years.
Yeah.
Give me a state of the club scene. Is it healthy now?
I think it's...
And plus, we're coming out of, you know...
Yeah, coming out of COVID. I mean, during COVID, that was shocking. You know, I mean, everything got canceled, and a whole lot of my concert gigs got canceled, and a lot of those venues, I don't even know if they're still around.
Wow.
Like, I had bookings all through that year, and they were gone. And a lot of those, a symphony, I used to play with the symphony outside of Seattle, and they folded, never came back. Oof. And so a lot of that happened, and I think it's pretty amazing what clubs have survived here.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I wish there were more.
Sure.
But you know, we still have the jazz rooms, like the Jazz Showcase is still here, and of course the Green Mill, and then there's little clubs like that are really beautiful, at Le Piano that's up in Rogers Park. I do spots there on occasion, and there's there's still a bit of it happening. I wish it was more.
Of course. What kind of audiences do you see these days? Because now I think there are consumers who were not weaned on going to jazz clubs, but they're consuming jazz digitally and thereby being attracted enough to go see the performer they like on the digital delivery system. You seeing younger faces in your crowds?
Yes, I am. And any of the gigs I do, I'm getting younger people are coming out, and they're like, we never heard of you before. Like, we just walked in here, and
we
love it. And,
yeah, what do you do? Yeah.
And then they're like, really loving the music, and it sounds fresh. That's what a lot of them are saying, you know, this sounds really... Did you write that song? I'm like, no, that was Cole Porter.
Cole Porter, yeah.
But I'm thrilled that it sounds that alive and new, and they love the storytelling. There's a very different audience, and I think it's evolving. It is slowly evolving.
Did you ever write songs?
Yes.
Yeah.
My album Like Glass came out in 2005.
That's right.
That had like four originals on it.
Is it difficult because you are shadowed pretty dramatically by the great songwriters of?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And, you know, it was once again at that time, because that came out in, that album came out in 2005, and there wasn't a lot of, the digital stuff wasn't there then, and it was just getting harder and harder to get heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we hired a publicist to get us airplay, and it was like...
No.
It didn't do anything.
Yeah,
Somebody played it once, you know.
It's so different because the whole nature and territory of the world has changed. You are playing May 16th, next Sunday, right across... May 26th, I'm sorry. May 26th, right across the river at Winters Jazz Club. You can go to Spider's website, which is Spider Saloff. That's S-A-L-O-F-F. .com, or Winters has a nice website too, wintersjazzclub.com. You're playing, you have always, not always, you were a little kid, but as an adult singer sensation, you played internationally, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
I wish it was more. I wish it was more, but I have been very fortunate. And then there are people that, you know, would have me back. Like, I've been to Australia four times.
You have some real good friends in Melbourne, don't you?
Yeah, they let me stay for a month.
Wow.
They let me stay with them for a month.
Wow.
And this couple that I met at Winters Jazz Club were from Melbourne, and they got my card. And when I got to Australia, two times I've been in Australia partying with them.
Good Lord.
Is that nuts?
That's great, but that's what the jazz world is and should be. And we will hear another song of... Spider Saloff from her newest, latest CD called From Broadway to Jazz. And we'll talk a little more again May 26th, next Sunday, across the river at Winners Jazz Club. And we'll talk about who she's playing with, too. So stay tuned. Okay, you may want to write this down because it's the last time I'm going to tell you. May 26th, next Sunday at Winners Jazz Club, Spider Saloff, will be performing with Spider. With who?
With fabulous Jeremy Kahn at the piano, Rob Cassinger at the bass, Eric Schneider on tenor sax and clarinet, and Alex Hall on percussion.
That's a good gang. Let's listen to one more song from the latest CD, From Broadway to Jazz. What's Brett going to play? What's the name of this song?
Okay, this is a song actually that Peggy Lee also recorded.
Oh, good.
And it's from a little-known Broadway show, and it's a gem from the early 60s.
Wow. You know what comes through on that? That is from Spider Saloff's latest CD, From Broadway to Jazz. I palpably sense your love for music.
Oh, yeah.
That tune, I really...
I'm mad for it. Just, it's my joy, and I have a beautiful life because of it. I really do. I have a great life.
Well, and you've met great people, and you collaborate. The whole nature of collaboration, that is indeed you singing, but there are other people playing on that too. It's a collaborative.
It's effort. That's what jazz is. Why jazz is so cool is because you're in the moment and you're hearing each other breathe. You know what they're going to do next, and not know what they're going to do next, and it's sort of like this very organic music.
You are going to play at Winters again in July. July 4th, actually.
Yes,
right?
We're going to be there on the 4th of July. I've never worked on the 4th of July in my whole life.
Really?
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm surprised Bill Allen didn't make you work every holiday.
No, I think he even shut down that day. I don't know.
And you're doing it. You're going, you're traveling, aren't you? You're going to go to...
I'm going to England in July as well. And I'm going to do a private concert there and see friends, and I used to play there a lot before COVID.
Yeah.
So this will be my first time back. I'm very excited about it. It should be a blast.
That's good. And you've come through that whole COVID lockdown with obviously same Spider Saloff spirit.
I was lucky,
that you've always
had. Just kept inventing all through it, you know.
Yeah.
Just kept doing it. Doing stuff online, my goofy YouTube channel and doing videos. And
you have your own YouTube channel?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it called?
It's got some convoluted name. If you go to my website, which is spiderjazz.com, is an easier way to remember it. That'll take you there too. But you'll see it. That's my YouTube channel and my Instagram page and all that stuff is on there.
Do you find, Spider, when you're out performing, that people, and I've heard this from many performers, that people seem to have a renewed need to be with other people?
Oh yeah, yeah. And I mean, recently, honestly, the past few months when we've played at Winters, the audiences have been electric. Electric, like standing ovations and screaming.
Wow.
And it's like, wow. And hanging on every minute, like just the whole sense of being out in a public place with a group of people where you're bonding and you're experiencing something. You're experiencing music together. It's like nothing else. It's like nothing else.
You're glad you moved to Chicago, aren't
you? Yeah, baby. Yeah, I love it here. I love this town.
You ever get back to New York?
Yeah, I do. I go back a few times a year, and it's nice. You know, I see my family, and I see close friends.
Did your parents at one point ever say, wow, you were a strange kid, but look what you've done now?
They kind of said that.
Yeah. Spider, you're a real treasure, honey, and... it's an ongoing pleasure to know you. We must have met for the first time in those early 90s days.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where you were at the tiny, tiny... God, for people, it's hard to explain the mystique and aura of the Sardine Bar.
It was magical, magical. And I met Tony Bennett there, and he was a doll. He just hung out and chatted. He was the nicest cat in the world.
You could possibly, I think, even standing, get like 40 people in that place.
I know they got way many. Oh, but one quickie.
Sure.
Liza Minnelli interrupted my show one night.
Why?
Because she had just closed at the Chicago Theater.
Yeah.
So she came in. She was with Joe Pesci. Billy Stritch is her musical director. And we didn't have to play another note all night. She climbed up on the stage, and she was just... And there were lines around the block. The word got out. It was like telepathic.
Oh my God. The
wildest night. I don't know how many hundred people were in that room. They were sitting on top of the bar. That's how nuts it was.
Spider, it's an ongoing pleasure to know you, honey.
Oh, man. Same here, Rick. Love you to bits.
Once more, next Sunday, Winners Jazz Club.